It's the Criterion. It's the Criterion. 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 In
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Criterion Project. And this is the show where we like to talk about what's playing on the Criterion channel. And sometimes we do fun bonuses, which is what we're doing today. And I'm film critic Rachel Wagner. Conrado Falco's here.
Yes, he is. How you doing, Rachel?
I'm doing good. I'm finally, I would say, I'm finally like 99%. I've still got a tiny bit of a sinus thing hanging on, but it was brutal. Texas was not nice to me, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah.
My body
that's
did not approve. Yeah.
Yeah. But speaking of that, it feels like a reunion to be recording again. It feels like it's been so long because we recorded in advance of your trip.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. It's just frustrating. I think anybody who travels a bit, you kind of realize that like all the good trips, you pay the price with like, there's just always those trips where just nothing goes right. You know, that's just the way it is. Sometimes and that was this trip to Texas. Unfortunately, it was a bummer because they have this thing, I guess, in Texas called cedar pollen. And my body did not like it at all. I got really sick and so it was about halfway through the festival. I didn't even write reviews for the like second half of the films I saw because I was so like groggy and just not feeling good. Like I took COVID test. I wasn't sick. It was just out, you know, it wasn't contagious. It was just allergies, but anyway, it was
no, that can be brutal. Yeah.
Yeah. It was brutal. And it was a bummer because I had planned 4 days with my best friend from college. We hadn't seen each other in a long, well, I mean, we'd seen each other, but not spent time together for a long time. But I was just, it just wasn't the trip that we both dreamed because I just wasn't, you know, feeling good, but it was still nice to talk and, you know, spend time together, but you know, this is just the way it is sometimes. Best laid plans, like they, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I, on the other hand, had a lovely trip to the Dominican Republic last week. And then, of course, I came back to New York and I was met with like intense, gloomy rain and then an earthquake, which was crazy.
That's
today.
Wild.
So, yeah, it's been a kind of, a, you know, life is a roller coaster, I guess.
Yeah, that's cool that you end up going to did you like stay at a resort or?
I stayed at a couple of different places mostly at the beach, you know.
Oh, cool.
Not quite resorts, but like, you know, Airbnb and kind of like beach complexes type situations. So yeah, it was a great trip.
That's great. I love the beach so much. That sounds like fun. Did you get to see any movies while you were on your trip? What about
kind
on the
of
plane?
I did. I mean, I did see, I did watch on the way back, we watched the movie Anyone But You, which felt like a very plane type movie to be watching. Coming back from vacation, you know, that's kind of like the rom-com that came out around Christmas time, I believe, right? With Sydney Sweeney and Glenn Powell, where they play this, you know, classic rom-com stuff. Like they go on a date, they have a great time, but then there's a misunderstanding where they think they hate each other. And so they start to hate each other. And then years later, they have to attend the same wedding. They're in the wedding party and they have this whole very much influenced, as the movie makes it kind of obvious, by Much Ado About Nothing, right?
Yeah, and that was the strongest parts, the ones that were like, in my opinion, the clear homages to Much Ado About Nothing, I thought was the strongest parts.
Yeah.
When it kind of goes into broad comedy, I thought it was less successful, but Glenn Powell.
He was really good. It goes back and forth. I mean, we've talked about this because we both are kind of like rom-com kind of aficionados, or we both like rom-coms a lot. So, there's been these attempts, you know, kind of to revive the rom-com, especially theatrically, right? Like we've had like the Hallmark movies, obviously, which you know so much about, and there's been Netflix rom-coms as well that's been kind of popular, but bringing them to that
fun.
Like marquee level. Yeah, but you know, I feel like there's been mixed results in the big ones. You know, some of them I did really like. I did love, I know that you weren't as big of a fan, but I love the movie No Hard Feelings with Jennifer Lawrence from last year. I thought that was a great. This one, I think, felt a little bit more like something like, you know, that Ticket to Paradise with George Clooney and Julia Roberts or something like that. But I did think I liked this better than that because it had, you know, it had young stars to it. Yeah, like, you know, there was something nice about seeing new young people who, you know, not like movie stars from 20 years ago who are still trying to holding on, but like the idea that the rom-com is not just a kind of like a flashback or like a nostalgia thing, right? But like that it can have a future. The movie I thought was
I can see
okay, kind
that.
of like mediocre but enjoyable in the way that, you know, rom-coms used to be. You know, we used to get a lot of them and most of them were mediocre, but we watched them on cable and it was entertaining, you know? So that's kind of was my impression with this one.
I can see that. I think that's fair. I didn't end up going fresh on it because I thought that Sydney Sweeney was really flat. She didn't, for me, she didn't have it. But yeah, I mean, and I'm so happy that it did so well. That's the most
That's
important
true.
thing for me.
It didn't start out that way, but you know, that's the thing with these rom-coms and these movies is that they hold on, you know, and people, you know, kind of like comfort watches and yeah, so let's hope that there's going to be more of them and even better ones.
Well, because I wasn't feeling well, and I always hate, you know, like having a cough in a movie theater because I just think that's rude and makes people uncomfortable. And so I hadn't been to the movies in a bit, since coming back from the festival, but I was feeling better this week, and I ended up on Tuesday, I did a 4-movie day, which I haven't done in quite a while. So I was literally at the cinema the entire day, which
Wow.
from the morning until the evening, which is so much fun. I love doing that. But as far as rom-coms, I actually saw a movie there in that four called Challengers. And yes,
Another
and
romance type movie.
yes, and it's Luca Guadagnino. And it's interesting because this movie is being sold on like being really hot, like that it's like a super sexy movie. And I just want to tell people, like, moderate your expectations on that front. Like,
Oh, interesting.
it is, I enjoyed it. It was a like the competition, the performances, it's, you know, got the melodrama that you and I like. But it's really not that sexy. Like even the like supposed threesome scene is really just kissing. The only reason, honestly, the only reason that it's rated R is because of a scene in a locker room and the language more than like it being so steamy. And so I guess I was a little disappointed on that front because I was expecting something like, whoa, you know, this is like Bridgerton or something, but it's really not.
That's interesting. Because you're right, the marketing has really leaned into the threesome aspect of it.
It's one scene. They are like completely fully clothed the entire time. It's just kissing, and you know, that's it. I don't
Well,
know. And so, but it's not, I don't mind that. I'm just saying, it's just managing expectations.
Interesting.
But it's more about tennis and about
Yeah.
competition
Okay.
than anything else. And
Oh.
it is kind of funny. People pointed out the Spider-Man to tennis path that these actresses somehow
Oh,
take.
Kristen Dunst, right?
That
Doing
she was in
Wimbledon.
Wimbledon, and
Yeah.
then
Emma
Emma
Stone
Stone.
did, you're right. Emma Stone did, what was that? The Billie Jean King movie, yeah. Oh,
So
that's
that
so
was
funny.
funny.
Yeah. I hadn't even thought of that. But you know, I do love tennis. I play tennis. I still play it sometimes. I played a lot when I was younger, when I was a kid. So I am excited for that. So knowing that, you know, I was excited for the sexiness too, but like, you know, knowing I might not get as much of the steaminess, but if I'm gonna get some good amount of tennis, I'll think I'll have a good time.
I bet you'll enjoy it. And then so that four movies, I saw Luca back in the theaters, which I really enjoy that little movie from Pixar. I think it's underappreciated. Mm-hmm. And then I saw Godzilla X Kong.
Oh yeah.
And that it starts out so good. And then.
Oh really?
Yeah. And then I didn't like it. But Dan Stevens is so good. He knows the assignment. He is very entertaining, in my opinion, in that movie. But then I saw Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, and I did not like it.
Yeah, no.
That was not for me.
No expectation. Yeah, I don't think I'll catch that one. I might catch up the others though, Godzilla. And Luca, I have actually never seen. I didn't know they were playing it in the theater.
Yeah, they've been doing that with the three movies that were, you know, the pandemic movies. They've been releasing them. Right. They did Turning Red and Soul. Mm-hmm. And Luca is the only one that I was able to catch of those three. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, I just think it's a really sweet, simple little movie. And to me, the Pixar movies recently have been just very convoluted.
Yeah.
And I just appreciate that this one it's a sweet, simple story of friendship.
Okay.
Yeah. So
that sounds kind of cute. I might catch up with that too, since it's available everywhere.
Yeah. So that's what's been going on with me. And today I'm excited. We're doing a special episode of the podcast because I've been sick and because we just haven't had a ton of time. And we are going to be talking about the AFI passions list. And so this is going to be fun. I also wanted to talk about this because I've been doing the AFI passions list for our patrons, and we're each week I have been doing an exclusive review for the patrons, and this week we'll start the final top 10, which is very fun.
So you've been okay. So let's talk a little bit about that whole thing. So for people who don't know, the AFI is the American Film Institute. And at some point in the 90s, I believe, they made a special where it was like their anniversary or something. And they did a list of the 100, you know, best American movies. It was 100 years, 100 American movies. And it was a special on TV and it was very popular. It was kind of a big deal. And after that, every year for about 10 years or so, right? They did like a new list that had different themes to them. You know, it wasn't just movies in general. And one of them was 100 Years, 100 Passions, which was done in 2002. And it was a list of love stories, I guess movies.
Yeah.
Love movies in America. And we can talk about more like how they define that or what the definition is. But Rachel, you've been doing, like you're saying, reviews of every single one. You've been going from number 100 and working your way to number one.
Yeah, because you try to think of something, you know, additional that's like some on brand that you could offer the patrons, and this was what I came up with each week, reviewing one of these movies on the Passions Project, and it's been a really interesting experience because. There's been, you know, a bunch, I think almost half I hadn't seen,
interesting.
Going into it. Yeah. So that, you know, that is, I checked off a lot of, classics and, you know, some of them, I was just like, what, why is this on this list? What is going on?
Yeah.
But that, in a way, that kind of makes it fun. Like, and even some movies that I really like, you know, just like, for instance, just this last week, it was on My Fair Lady, which is a movie I enjoy. You know, I love musicals, but I don't think it's passionate like at all. Like, I think the worst thing about it is the romance.
Is the romance.
I think it's what I try to like kind of pretend is
it is.
You know,
yeah. I looking at the list, I had a couple of thoughts. One of them was I wondered if it was how much of it is that. That, you know, our view of movies and the movies that are in the kind of like in the culture in the zeitgeist has changed since 2002 to now. You know, a lot of these movies are I feel like are kind of like people don't talk about them anymore, you know, like and some of them And if you did the list today, I think it would look very different. You know, I think there would be a lot of stuff that would be different on it. There would probably be a little more diversity in quite a few ways, you know, definitely in terms of non-white protagonists and also maybe the female directors, more directors of color, things like that, right? But I think it would also reflect, even in the classic Hollywood movies, I think they would pick maybe different things, or different things would move up higher than what they had.
Back then. I mean, for sure, there would also be like more queer. There's none.
None, that's true. Definitely.
On air, like something like Brokeback Mountain, I would imagine.
Yeah, that would definitely would be there for sure. And so. Moonlight probably as well, or something like that.
Yeah.
And also, the other thing that I was thinking is that, oh man, did I just forget what I was about to say? Oh, that I think that, you know, since this is a Criterion project, I do think that there's a big difference between 2002 and now, 2024, I think is... Criterion, the movies that are on Criterion, either on the collection or that are highlighted on the channel and things like that, have really shaped the way that people think of what an important movie is. You know, I think a lot of the movies that are not on here that I think could be, a lot of them are Criterion releases that I think have gained importance and attention because they have been Criterion releases since then. Which I think it's interesting to think about how. You know, we talk about canons and trying to do something different with that and change it. But I do think that, and this is something I think I said when we talked about the Sight and Sound list when we did that episode, that I do think Criterion has a huge influence that is maybe, I think it's actually over, like, represented. Like, I think it's too strong. Mm-hmm. I think, like, you know, like thinking, because I think for a lot of people, there is no distinction between the fact that Criterion is this thing that presents itself as kind of like a marker of quality, and the fact that it is a company, you know, that it, that like there are some titles that are released by them because they have contracts. There are some titles that are released that aren't released by them because they just can't get the rights, you know, and another company has them. And so, yeah,
that's true. They are kind of seen as sort of the curator of quality films. And I think.
Definitely. Yeah. Especially here in the US and I guess in North America in general.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And yeah, I mean, I would love to talk to some of these people and find out what the heck, like, I mean, the fact they have Witness on the list, I think is very strange. I mean, there is a romantic component, I guess, but it's a mystery. It's a, you know, it's a crime story. Like,
I also wonder,
it's very strange.
I wonder who voted for this, because it does have a feel of like people who like didn't pay too much attention. They're like, I guess this movie had a romance in it, right? Let's just write, you know, Working Girl, which is, you know, a fun movie, but I don't think the romance is at all important part of Working Girl.
And like, I mean, Manhattan, that's a strange Manhattan one on this list.
That would, and let me tell you, that would not make the list if they made it in 2024.
I mean, no, and A Streetcar Named Desire, like, that's a very, I mean, I guess if you're looking at passion in the terms of like
intensity,
you know, like anger, then I guess, but like, I mean, it's definitely not romantic.
This movie is full of like weird, unexpected, crazy choices that haven't aged that well, in my opinion. What has been your main takeaway after, you know, doing 90 of these movies, basically?
You know, it's been really an interesting experience, to especially certain eras that I am very unfamiliar with, like to see Sunrise, to see The Sheik, to see you know, some of these you know, silent films. I'm pretty unfamiliar with, so that's been really fun. And there have been a couple films that it was interesting to revisit that I had watched, you know, years ago, and watching again, like The Graduate. I felt like I appreciated that more on this watch than I have in the past. And that I was able to kind of look at it on a more subversive level than than I had before. So that's been, you know, interesting. Also, you know, there's some classics that I finally watched, like Ninchaka, watching Dark Victory, and you know, we'll talk about some of the other ones in our list, but you know, so that was fun. I watched like From Here to Eternity, which I'd seen, but I Eclipse Up, I'd actually never seen it. You know, and then of course, like watching some of my favorites is always fun. Princess Bride, Moonstruck, Pillow Talk, you know, mm-hmm, things mm-hmm. like that. That's really fun. I discovered The Goodbye Girl from the list. I'd never seen that. And yeah. I really, really enjoyed it. What a sweet little rom-com. And there's not that many rom-coms on the list. A lot more romantic dramas.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. But that was one I had never seen. So I really enjoyed that. So yeah, it's been really fun. And I'm excited because so what's going to happen for the next series is our friend Zita. So what I did is I asked her to come up with another 100, like for her to make an AFI basically list for me.
Oh, wow. Yeah. With movies that are not in this one.
Yes. And great. So that's what I'm going to, that'll be the next series mm-hmm. that I'll do. And that is
very exciting.
It's gonna be fun.
Sita is a friend of the show, of course. Yeah. And we've both been on her podcast, I think, right? She does a podcast where she talks about the movies that were nominated to be on this passions list but didn't make the cut. So I went and I talked about Bull Durham, which is one of my favorite movies. I wonder if she'll put that on the list. I don't know if she will. I don't think she liked it as much as me, but but I love that movie. And we had a great conversation about that.
That's another movie I watched on the plane, believe it or not.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. That is a good plane movie too. That is also a sexy movie in
some
ways. It is
a very sexy movie. And I usually try on the plane to kind of, cause I don't want to make people sitting next to me uncomfortable. So I try to avoid like movies like that.
Oh,
I didn't have anybody near me. So I watched that and that was very, I really did enjoy it. I really did. But I've always said that the ideal plane movie is Mamma Mia.
Oh, wow.
Yes. This is on much study and thought because Mamma Mia, it won't make you cry. It won't make you tense. It's super cheerful. It'll make you in a good mood. And it has nothing like offensive that would, because even the second one, it has like, you know, has some sexy scenes. Mm-hmm. So I, which I'm fine with, but just on the plane, I try to keep it pretty tame. And it's got like your escapism, it's travel, it's a perfect movie for the plane.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, you know what? When we were watching Anyone But You on the plane, we had some kids sitting in the row behind us, and I was thinking, oh, should it be? Is it okay to be watching this? The kids that's like right. peeking through and like having learning a lesson about life here.
Yeah, but yeah. So what we thought would be fun is we each picked three movies to talk about from this list from the collection.
That's right.
And I tried to make it ones that I haven't talked about that much, you know, on the, like I could have picked Moonstruck or whatever. We did a whole episode on that. Let's dive in. Let's do it.
Yeah. So would you like me to go first?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so I tried to, well, you know, I was looking at this list. I keep looking at it, you know, just because I keep seeing how the movie, especially how the movies are ranked, not only what is in the list, but where they place and what's ahead of them. And I just get a headache, like just thinking like, what is happening? You know, even movies that I like, because the criteria doesn't seem to be very random. You know, it's a poll. Yeah, it's not been curated in a way of like, let's focus on this, you know, primary element. Yeah. It does not feel like... Yeah.
Yeah. Like, why is Vertigo on this list? This is not a passionate movie. What is it? Like, what?
You know, and what is it where it is
so
in between
too,
Moonstruck and Ghost? It's like, what? What makes Moonstruck more of a 100 passion than Vertigo, but Vertigo more than a 100 passion by Ghost? You know, like, creature is not clear. Either Vertigo goes at the beginning of the list or at the end, not in the middle between those two. So it seems very, very random. But anyway. Yeah. I did want to highlight something that I thought was shocking to me, especially because this was made in 2002, and I would have expected this movie to have much more of a cachet and be one of the top you know, like I knew this was going to be on the list when you sent me the list. I like saw it on there. It was like, oh, one of my favorite movies. Of course, this was on the list. I mean, it's not going to be number one, right? But it's going to be like top 10, top 20.
Uh-huh.
Number 38 on the list, It Happened One Night, Frank Capra,
oh, yeah.
1934. We did a whole episode about it on the podcast.
We did.
But I want to talk about it again because when we did that episode, I had only seen that movie once before when I was a teenager, way back when, and I was watching it again. I didn't remember much about it. I had a good time. I liked it. And since we did that episode, I have come to love this movie. It is one of my favorite movies, I think, ever. And I think it's like, without a doubt, you know, to me, it's like the template for the romantic comedy.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think it is it's a foundation movie for the genre. No question. No question. And they have such like good chemistry, and the banter is so good between the two of them.
Yeah, it has all of it. You know, the you know, conflicting rich girl and the hardworking reporter, and they get together and they have to travel on the bus. And also something else that made me appreciate it even more was learning more about the movie and learning about what it represented in its making and what it meant at the time that it came out and what made it such a big hit, because this was made by Columbia Pictures, which was at the time not a super prestigious, it was not one of the big, big studios. You know, it was kind of like a middle tier studio. And the movie was not expected to be a hit. You know, Clark Gable was sent from MGM to make this movie as punishment. They was like, go make this stupid movie that, like, you know, that is going to be a flop and nobody's going to care to put you in your place. And then it ended up being a huge hit because it connected with people, largely because this was, you know, the middle of the Depression, the height of the Depression, really. And this was a movie about a rich woman, a rich girl who's been pampered her whole life, kind of like going into the real world and seeing, like, you know, it's kind of lost on modern audiences maybe a little bit, just like how important it was to see a woman like that on the bus for people at that time, or like making the line to take a shower at a shelter, you know, or like at a motel, and those kinds of things. It was like a big deal, and it's done.
That's interesting.
By still having a romance at the center and all of that, and obviously the one of the most touching scenes for me in the movie and one of my favorites is when they're all on the bus singing the song, The Man in the Flying Trapeze, and that whole section is just such a moment of, like, you know, making it through together through this hard time that I think also spoke to people at the time.
Yeah.
And to me, it makes it just such a great, wonderful movie.
Yeah, that's true. We talked about this before, but I do feel like it's something that modern movies have largely lost is just taking a second to sort of breathe with the characters, and just like that scene isn't needed for the plot. It's we've gotten so plot heavy in most movies that, you know, unless it's like an outright slow cinema kind of thing, you know, that just having a scene in a movie like that where they're just singing a song with the people on the bus, you know, and I think sometimes we've kind of lost that in a lot of modern, like, blockbusters or movies like that. You got to keep adding characters. You got to keep adding plot.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Nice when you have, I was talking about that with, about Cinderella, the Disney Cinderella, when she sings Sweet Nightingale, and she's just cleaning the floor, and there's you know, the beautiful bubbles, and that scene, it's completely not necessary for the plot. It does nothing. It's just a moment with the character to just enjoy a beautiful song and you know, a beautiful moment with the character, and especially in animation, I just feel like that's getting very rare.
Yeah, definitely. What's your first pick?
So my first pick, I'm very pleased that this list did have two animated films on the list, because a lot of times those are kind of, you know, these people like AFI kind of turn their nose up at animation. So I was pleased that they have Lady and the Tramp and Beauty and the Beast. And so Beauty and the Beast is my first pick. I feel like, you know, we really haven't talked about it that much on the podcast.
Not on this podcast.
Yeah, not on this podcast. but what an absolutely beautiful film. The animation, the music, it's got so many iconic sequences. And I, you know, just the whole message that beauty is found within, and being able to forgive one another and find love somebody for their heart and soul, you know, it's just like beautiful. Mm-hmm. And it's got such a great villain in Gaston, hilarious. I love Richard White's performance as Gaston. He's so funny. And the idea of sort of the town hero, everyone's favorite guy. And he lets one person not liking him, you know, get to him, and he can't deal with it. And, you know, such a great line when she says, "He's no monster, Gaston. You are." That's classic. And a scene like "Be Our Guest," you know, being inspired by the Busby Berkeley and old school musicals, and as wonderful. And so yeah, it's an absolute masterpiece.
I think that when it comes to representing animation and American animation, Disney in particular on this list, that is definitely the right choice without question. Yeah. You know, in terms of like romantic movies that Disney has made, I think up to now, I don't think there's one that to me has a better central romance than Beauty and the Beast. I think that it really shines through there, and the emotion is so strong, and you know, I find it a very moving movie because of that. I think it does a great job in the characterization, especially for an animated movie. Beauty and the Beast did pretty well on the list. You know, they ranked it 34, which is, you know, I would have expected, you know, animation to be maybe a little more disrespected than that. So that's a couple ahead of It Happened One Night. It's ahead of Titanic, which is kind of interesting.
I mean, that's one of the later ones. They because it was 2001, so there's not very many in the 90s on the list,
right? I guess, but those are both 90s movies. Titanic is an interesting one. I think that, you know, when it came out, obviously it wasn't such a huge hit, and then I think it had a moment of like people saying like, oh, it's so corny, it's overrated. But now it has totally, you know, I think if they made this list now, Titanic would be in the top 10, maybe even in the top 5 or something. I think
it would definitely be higher, no question. And yeah, it's one that I've admittedly kind of turned around on myself. When it came out, like, it's hard to overstate how popular it was. I had a friend who literally saw it 18 times. And I mean, my friends were all like obsessed with it. And so being, you know, being the contrarian and the movie person that I was, I, you know, it's lame, and, you know, I had to be the contrarian. I had that kind of view of it for a long time. And it wasn't until I became a critic and I kind of started to look at it more objectively that I was like, you know what, this is actually really good. Especially I think the last hour, once it hits the iceberg, I mean, it is just nonstop adrenaline, and it becomes almost like this sort of thriller, this historical thriller. And I think that whole part is extremely effective. So yeah, I've come around on it myself.
Yeah, I went to see it. They had it on 3D re-release earlier this year, right? Or last year? I don't remember when it was, but I went to see it in the movie theater. I thought it was incredible, but also I discovered that it is so intense, that last hour, I think, that I found that I could barely take it. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe all these people. And then the romance of Jack and Rose, I was really in it. I will speak to the strength of Titanic as a romance and a movie.
It's an interesting placement for it. I mean, certainly I think now it would be ahead of something like The King and I. Why is that on this list?
Also ahead of a movie that's a couple spots ahead of It Happened One Night, the movie Gigi from 1958. Like, what is happening? But anyway.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Like, yeah, I mean, where for you on the, we've never done your Disney canon ranking, but it sounds like Beauty and Beast would be pretty high for you.
I think so. I don't, you know, a lot of the Disney movies I haven't seen in a long time at this point, since I was, you know, when we first met about 10 years ago, I was doing them on my blog at the time. And so they were fresh in my memory. Now, a lot of them I haven't seen in a while, but I would imagine, I would be surprised if Beauty and the Beast wasn't in the like top, I don't know, five or something.
Yeah. I do think it's fun that they have Lady and the Tramp on here. I mean, to have a non-human romance, I think it's fun.
Yeah, that's cute. And I mean, it obviously, and that's a good choice because that iconic scene with the spaghetti, everybody knows that, you know, like it's such, so that feels like it belongs on this list, you know?
I was there used to be this old show on YouTube called Movie Fights, where they would have different topics and they would people just taking different sides, and one was the ideal restaurant in a movie, and I just remember the one fighter, he picked the restaurant in Lady and the Tramp, and he's like, this man is feeding dogs, like he's a crazy person. You know it's gonna be good food. I was like, that's a really good point. That was so funny. But yeah, it's so charming.
Mm-hmm.
It really captures, you know, that small town Americana charm. So yeah, it's fun they have that. But what do you have next?
Let me see. Okay, so speaking of movies from the 90s, one that I think I was surprised that it made it to the list at all. I think that if they made the list today, maybe it would be higher. I think it has a lot of fans that have emerged in the last few years, and I certainly am one of them. If I made a list, it would definitely be there and pretty high up too. And that is the movie The Bridges of Madison County by Clint Eastwood from 1995, starring Clint Eastwood and Meryl Streep. Obviously, Bridges of Madison County, kind of like the 50 Shades of Grey of its time, you know, this kind of like very popular, kind of trashy romance novel that people, you know, read by like moms, and people were like, oh, you know, this is not like high culture. It's kind of like this cheesy thing. But then along comes Clint Eastwood, one of the most, you know, kind of like macho, masculine man filmmakers. And he makes an adaptation that is, I think, incredibly moving. And it's so, you know, I've never read the book, but from what I understand, very different from the book in its approach, you know, so understated, so matter of fact, so you know, beautiful, simple cinematography and you know, these performances between Clint Eastwood and Meryl Streep that is just like incredible chemistry.
Yeah.
Eastwood being, you know, like casual and romantic in a way that I think he's been, you know, he's casual in movies before when he's playing an action part in a way, but not like this. You know, this felt to me so different from anything else that I had seen him in. And he was so kind of like light in a way that he usually isn't, you know, he's always so heavy with like the duty that he has to perform and, you know, whatever.
That's true.
And Meryl doing, you know, like she always does, she has to do an accent, so she's like doing an Italian accent in this one, but you know, in a very the accent, I don't think it's that distracting, but it's also not that accurate, you know, but I do think that she makes up for it with just like how natural she is in the movie. And I think this might be one of, if not my favorite Meryl performance, definitely one of them.
It's high.
Yeah. What do you think of this?
I mean,
one?
At this time she was the queen of accents. I mean,
Yeah,
especially this era. A beautiful movie. It's one of those ones that captures a moment. It kind of reminds me of like, if you've ever seen Weekend from,
Andrew Hay.
Yeah, like in that's kind of, I feel like it's kind of a similar, like capture this, it's not going to be the forever love, but they had this moment that was important, and also the fact that like her children now see her as like a full human being, that they never looked at her in that way.
You know, I'm glad you bring that up because the first time I saw this movie, I liked it a lot, but I didn't love the framing device. You know, the kids coming to the house, seeing the thing, and then we cut back to them. But when I watched it again, I actually, now I think that device is kind of brilliant. It's like a great way to condition the people watching the movie, especially at the time, for with the novel having such a reputation, to take the idea of this romance novel and what it means to the main character in this movie seriously, you know, like understanding their mom in a different way. But it's also us understanding our moms for reading this book and being taken by it, you know, like it's almost like doing something very meta, like Barbie or Lego movie, without sacrificing the, you know, the seriousness or you know, or the face value of the characters, which I think it's kind of incredible in terms of adaptation.
Yeah. And a beautiful score, and and the cinematography, like I said, just captures like this moment in time so well.
Yeah, definitely. Well,
yeah.
It's like, I recommend it. And I think it's something that I think maybe was a little bit forgotten, because it's such a, you know, Clint Eastwood has a lot of very intense fans. But because it's such a different movie from what he usually makes, you know, a romance, it has kind of been put to the side. But I've also seen recently, in recent years, a lot of these Clint Eastwood fans rediscovering it and recognizing it as one of his best. And I'm happy to see that, because I think it might be my favorite of his movies. I think it's really, really great.
Well, my next one is one of the rom-coms, I guess, that they had on the list. In my opinion, it might be the funniest movie ever made. It's in the conversation with Monty Python for me. It's What's Up, Doc? And I would love to do an episode of the show on What's Up, Doc? Eventually. But I love this movie so much. It does so many things that so many comedies, it has patience in a joke that a lot of comedies don't have. Like, for instance, there's this one scene where these workers are carrying a piece of glass.
Oh my God, that's so good.
Right. And you expect like the car to crash into the glass and it shatter and everything like that. And they think, okay, it's going to happen here. And then it doesn't. And then they get, and so they keep this joke all the way through, and they get to the cross. And then it's only then that the glass shatters. And it's just there's just so many jokes like that that they have kind of patience for in this madcap, you know, situation that makes it so funny. And Madeline Kahn, I just absolutely love and adore her. She's so hilarious, and especially as like she's like, what, how do you not know who I am, like how do you, like she gets she's like, what is going on, and she just gets so
Madeline Kahn is so funny in this movie, and so is Barbara Streisand, I think, who is like pretty incredible, playing kind of like, you know, a force of nature in the movie, and with her old Bugs Bunny shtick.
She's like an agent of chaos, and I love it.
I love so this much. Kind of comedy when, you know, whenever, one of my favorite things in a comedy is whenever you, like, this happens in the Three Stooges all the time, like when you cut to a new, you're spending time with the characters, like, you know, everything's going wrong, whatever, and then you cut to someone else who you've never seen before, who has, like, you know, in the Stooges it'll be like a guy who's baking a cake, and he goes like, oh, finally, after so many hours of hard labor, I finally finished my beautiful cake, and you just laugh knowing what's going to happen to this cake. And with the, and with that glass pain section that you were talking about, it is so funny because it's that, and then of course it is subverted on top of that, which is like so good. And I agree, this movie is very, very funny.
Definitely
among the funniest I've seen as well.
I love it so much, and it's one that I don't know, I just feel like you don't hear it talked quite as much about, as you know, like It's a Mad Men World, or, you know, just some of these other comedies. I feel like you don't hear it talked about as much, but it's really, really, really good. So
yeah,
check it out.
And I think we shouldn't pass WhatsApp Doc without also mentioning Bringing Up Baby, which we've done an episode about, and which is so clearly a huge influence on WhatsApp Doc, right? It does in a lot of ways feel like just a riff on Bringing Up Baby, just kind of modernized for the 70s. And and I think the Katharine Hepburn in that movie and Barbara Streisand in What's Up Doc are kind of like almost the same character. Yeah. You know, they're just like these like unstoppable forces of nature, completely wacky and, you know, delightful.
It's like you shouldn't even resist. Like, what are you doing? Like, you should just be, you're not going to fail. You're going to be with this woman, whether you like it or not. On both of them. Yeah, I agree. Well, all right. Well, what's your last pick?
So my last pick, I'm going to do a complete, I hope you don't get upset at this. I'm going to cheat completely. And I'm going to, instead of picking another movie on this list, so there are many that I love, like Lady Eve is on there, Ninotchka, Shop Around the Corner, you know, all incredible romance movies. But a movie that I think I'm a little bit shocked wasn't on there, and that I think, especially given that they are including dramas and they're thinking of passion as, you know, intensity, one of the most moving movies I've ever seen, and one that has a reputation for being the saddest movie ever made, and which I think is deserved, even though it is an incredible movie. It is very, very sad. Have you ever seen the movie Make Way for Tomorrow, Rachel?
No, I never have.
So this is a 1937 movie done by Leah McCarey, and it stars Victor Moore and Beulah Bondi as a couple, as an elderly couple who, you know, they fall on hard times. They're you know, and they have to sell their house. So they have to put up their house for foreclosure, and then they have to go, you know, they don't have where to live. So they ask their kids, you know, can we stay with you? And they're like, okay, fine. But then it happens that the kids have their own thing, you know, they have their own families and there's not enough room in their houses. So they have to, mom has to stay with one of them and dad has to go stay with another. And so this elderly couple who've lived their life together the whole time and who love each other are suddenly separated for the first time after such a long time, you know? And it's just this idea of them kind of like trying to go through this new phase of their life and just like being without each other for the first time. And just like, you just see how much they have come to depend on each other, how much they love each other, how they're not understood by their kids and the other people in the family. And they just have this very simple desire to live together and be together again. Oh my God, I'm like starting to tear up just thinking about it, because the movie is so, so beautiful about that. And it has, an incredible moving performances. Not to spoil very much, but when they finally do come together towards the end of the movie, it's one of the most emotional, beautiful, bittersweet sections of any movie I've ever seen. It is like, it is maybe the most I've cried at a movie, and they were both tears of sadness and happiness and emotion. It's one of the best movies ever made, in my opinion, and everyone should watch it at least once. I don't know if I would ever watch it again, just because of how intense the experience was, but it's truly, truly on another level. In 1937, or rather in 1938, Leo McCarey won the Best Director Oscar for, not for this movie, but for The Awful Truth, which is on the AFI 100 Passions list. And when he got the award, he said, you know, thank you, but I think you've given it to me for the wrong movie. You know, this the both movies came out the same year, and, you know, Awful Truth was a bigger hit, but he thought of this as like a masterpiece. Obviously, the movie was not a huge hit because it's, you know, such a sad movie. But it went on to inspire a lot of other movies, like Tokyo Story by Ozu is basically kind of a remake of this movie, or very much inspired by it. And so is the movie Love is Strange by Iris Axe. And there's been other movies about it, about like, you know, elderly couples kind of like either being separated or dealing with their kids as grownups, and they're all kind of like go back to this one. So
I think there is also on the list, there's On Golden Pond, which is about an older couple. So yeah, that's, I've never heard of this. So that's really exciting. It is in the Criterion Collection.
Yeah, and very much deserved. And, you know, we'll see. Maybe Sita will have put it in her list. I don't know about that. But I think it would definitely deserve a spot. And I would recommend to everyone, if they want to spend, you know, to have a good cry and then like be spend some time with one of the best movies ever.
Oh, cool. Good. Well, my last pick was probably the biggest surprise that I had never seen. I didn't really know anything about it. It obviously has stars, but I don't know. I just didn't know anything about it. But I loved A Place in the Sun. This is from 1951. Director George Stevens, stars Montgomery Clift and Elizabeth Taylor and Shelley Winters. And this was such a tense movie. I just thought it was like, I was so invested in what was going on and what was happening, because basically, like, at the very beginning of the movie, he, Montgomery Clift's character, falls for Shelley Winters' character, and they have this little tryst, I guess, and she ends up pregnant. But in the in between time with Trist and him finding out that she's pregnant, he gets an in with this high society family, this heiress, and he starts to kind of court. He moves on from the Shelley Winters character and starts to court Elizabeth Taylor, but then he finds out that the woman's pregnant, and so he and you start to like slowly kind of realize like how horrible he is and what a horrible person he is and his plan. And I just thought it was so gripping and so well done and beautifully shot. The acting is so good, and they do just enough with Shelley Winters' character to be like, she's pretty annoying, you know? And so you're kind of like, you're sort of a little bit resenting her a little bit. And I think that's very effective, because obviously, like, so you bring those feelings in and you're like, she doesn't deserve to die, you know, like she's not, but I just think the way that they kind of like, they kind of build that up is very effective. And so you have all these different emotions, and then Elizabeth Taylor's character getting more and more attached, but then he's got this big secret, but slowly she starts to figure things out. And I don't know, I just thought it was such a good movie. I was so engaged with the characters and to have such a scumbag as your lead character is very unusual, you know, I thought it was excellent. So
yeah,
it was a fun surprise that I liked it as much as I did.
That's great to know. I've only ever heard great things about this movie, so I think you're nudging me towards finally watching it.
Yeah.
It sounds very, very good.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of something like David Fincher or somebody would make now.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's got that like little bit of sort of cynicism that, you know, that he would, or a lot that he would have. I could picture him making an interesting remake of this movie.
All right.
Yeah, so there we go. Well, great. I would love to know, the listeners, I would love to know your thoughts on this AFI list. We'll put the link in the description and also on our Twitter. And if you're interested in getting a weekly exclusive review from me, check out the Patreon. I think we have a lot of great benefits where you get to be part of watch alongs with, it's mostly Hallmark people, because that's my my main source. But they're super fun, and it's interesting to find out how any movies are made. And so I think it is a very, I try to make it as valuable a Patreon as possible. But yeah, every week you get to read my thoughts on one of these movies. And so that's hopefully a fun thing. And if you check it out, and this has been fun. I enjoyed, it's always fun to just talk about just different things that we've normally been able to talk about. So
yeah, it's fun to have these episodes every now and then when we get to like, you know, just list a couple of movies that we love and recommend to everybody.
Yeah.
That's for sure. All right. Yeah. So next time on the podcast, we are going to, I guess this is going to be Rachel month. It's going to be all the things that Rachel is passionate and interested in. So, of course, everybody knows Rachel loves the movie Your Name and the director Makoto Shinkai, who is a very popular anime Japanese director. Yes. So they have a Makoto Shinkai collection on the Criterion channel right now called Directed by Makoto Shinkai. And they include, I think, a couple of his feature length movies, not all of them, and definitely a lot of his shorts. There's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's about 7 movies that are up on the Criterion channel right now. And we are going to watch one of them that I haven't seen before that Rachel says is the one that has, you know, the biggest chance of me getting being into it. So I'm excited for it. It's called The Garden of Words. Is that right, Rachel?
Yes. Yeah. It doesn't have any of his sort of flights of fancy or you know, sort of sci-fi elements. And so I think it's a very sweet, it's a very sweet friendship slash mild romance story. So I think you'll enjoy it. So yeah, it's beautiful regardless. Mm-hmm. So that'll be fun to talk about.
Yeah. I mean, all his movies are beautiful. And once upon a time, a couple of years ago, when I had my other podcast, we did an episode about Your Name. Do you remember that? We talked about that movie. So that was fun. That's still up in the internet. So people can find that if they want to hear us talk, you know, get a little preview of our Makoto Shinkai thoughts for next episode.
Yeah, and I have tons on my channel, tons of Your Name content. That's true. So if you want more, you can check that out.
There's definitely, if you want more Your Name content from Rachel Wagner, you don't have to search very long.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that will be really, that will be super fun. Make sure you're following us at Criterion Pod on Twitter. We have fun over there. And Conrado, where can people find you?
They can find me on Letterboxd if you search my name, Conrado Falco III. And I'm also on Twitter, X, whatever that's called now. But honestly, I'm not spending too much time on there. But if you want to find me, you can at Coco Hits NY.
Great. And you can find me at Rachel's Reviews, all over social media, iTunes, YouTube, and on Rotten Tomatoes. So check that out. And if you are listening on iTunes, please leave your ratings and reviews for the podcast. That would really help us a lot. We'd sure appreciate it. And if you have any ideas for bonus episodes that you'd like us to do, please let us know. We'd love to hear. And again, check out the Patreon. We'd appreciate that too. And thanks so much, everybody. We'll talk to y'all later.
See you next time.